Hi, Murtada.
Hello, Nathaniel. It's good to talk to you again on the podcast.
I'm starting to think we should have like a musical theme intro.
We need to. Is it from A Star Is Born? Is it The Shallow?
That'd be overplayed at this point. But yeah, to make it feel more like a show.
Yes. Yeah. Music is nice. Let's come up with something. I don't know. Maybe Judy Garland. The man who got it.
No, it has to be an original theme, so it sounds like it's like a weekly thing, like a TV show.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to find a friend who's musically inclined, because I'm not, and I don't think you are.
I am not, no. Well, welcome back, listeners, to The Film Experience. We know we've been absent, but we're going to try weekly from here on out.
Festival season is hard. I'm so exhausted from the New York Film Festival. It's been a whole month.
Yeah.
Finally over.
Yeah, I do this every year. I convince myself I'm going to go to like everything because it's easier at New York than in other places because it's only a few a day as opposed to, and not even every day, but.
Yeah, there's lots of gaps, yes.
But because it's always right when I get home, like literally the day
from
after
Toronto.
I get home from Toronto, I'm always like, you know, not showing up at screenings.
Yeah.
Because what happens with festivals is you see so many movies back to back that like 2 weeks later you're like, what did I see?
Uh-huh.
Which is not the ideal way to watch movies.
Yes. Because the movies need to land, like.
Yeah.
And sometimes that takes a few days.
Speaking of landings, moon landings.
Oh, are we starting with First Man?
Yeah, I figured that was the natural segue. The punny segue.
Yeah.
Which you just saw yesterday.
I did, yes.
But which I saw weeks ago in the middle of all these other movies at Toronto.
Yeah.
So it's not quite fresh in my memory.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see it on IMAX?
No, I just saw it at a regular thing. I'm not a fan of IMAX, so I always try to just see them regular. Did you see it on IMAX?
I did, yeah. I saw it in the very first IMAX theater that existed.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of Toronto, so. For that movie, I enjoyed the IMAX, but I don't normally need it. Or even prefer it, because you have to have certain seats for the experience to be good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you liked it more than I did.
That's probably a safe assumption. I mean, I haven't even heard what you thought, but I liked it a lot.
Yeah, it was okay.
It's not in my top 10 of the year, but I liked it a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it had a few gripping moments, and it definitely looked beautiful, and Claire Foy was amazing, and even people are a little down on Ryan Gosling, but I think he had a couple of scenes that were really well done from him. But all in all, I just was like, what is this about? Like, other than just sort of information dump about Neil Armstrong and Apollo 11. Like, what ideas was Damien Chazelle trying to push with this movie? I don't know. He seems ambivalent at best, or mocking sometimes, like, especially when he has those scenes where he's presenting the protesters against the spending and the life loss. And, you know, are you mocking these people? Because the movie, for the rest of it, is just so about how amazing this is, and then you get 2 seconds of that. I just was lost a little bit in what he was trying to say.
Are you talking about the Whitey's on the Moon song?
Yeah, that, and Kurt Vonnegut, and, you know, all the protesters who all, like, are presented in this montage.
Mm-hmm.
Is that his name? What is his name? Kurt something or another? I don't know that last name. Anyway, and I was like, so, because I was looking for, I was trying to look for what he was trying to say with the movie. What is the point of view? And I don't know that I found anything. What did you think of what he was trying to say?
Let me backtrack a little. I did not find that montage mocking at all. I did find it a little hedging his bets.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he was mocking it at all. I think he was deep in the thrall of this, like, wonder of this true story that somewhere along the line he probably thought, oh, there was all this other history and I should at least mention it.
Mm-hmm.
That's
yes.
what I think. So I think it was more like hedging his bets. Because those those criticisms would come if you never mentioned it.
Yeah. So then maybe it's like mocking at worst, ambivalent at best. I was just like, so, but I think what was missing to me is like, what is he trying to say about them? And what is he trying to say about the moon landing? Because like you say, he was hedging his bets, which to me means like in the end, he didn't really have a point of view with this story other than to just present it as this achievement or just sort of like, I guess recorded for history. I don't know what he was
trying
to do.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that what all biopics about human achievement are, though, is just sort of a documentation about a triumph?
Yeah, I guess, maybe.
I mean, I know there's a speech within it, but, you know, since I saw the movie, like, I guess almost a month ago,
mm-hmm.
I don't remember it exactly, but there is a speech where Neil Armstrong addresses complaints about, like, why are we spending all this money,
mm-hmm.
and why, and it's, I remember it being, like, sort of a good moment in the movie in terms mm-hmm. of messaging about striving and, you know.
I mean, there is the scene where he's talking to his friend, played by Jason Clarke, who's talking about his son, since his dad, because he's going to the moon, the son is now exploring a little bit more and thinking more about the world. So I guess there is, it's sort of, you have that scene you mentioned, plus this scene, there is that dovetail together telling us,
mm-hmm.
That, you know, when you expand your horizons, you expand as we expand as humans.
Mm-hmm.
So he is obviously trying to say something, but maybe in my mind, it just wasn't enough and it was sort of ambivalent and not very clear.
I didn't feel the movie was ambivalent at all, but I do see what you're saying. Like, I think he was very, very passionate that this was a great moment in American history.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not people agree with that, it's up to them, but that's what I got from his direction.
Yeah.
And I personally, the thing that I liked about the movie is that he really went for the intimacy of the achievement as opposed to, you know, so the grandeur, even though the grandeur mm-hmm. is there, we spend a lot more time than I was expecting with the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And because Claire Foy is so great in it.
Mm-hmm. And, amazing.
Yeah. And, he's great in it, I think too. I think you get this really compelling portrait of a marriage of people who are kind of opposites,
mm-hmm.
but really in tune with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that scene where she sort of, my words are failing me this morning.
That, when she makes him talk to his son.
Yeah, when she, you know, forces him basically into actually dealing with his mm-hmm. Duties as a father to actually communicate with the children was an amazing scene, I thought.
Such a highlight. I think Claire Foy is definitely the MVP of the film for me.
Yeah.
All her scenes are just amazing. Even when she's just like smoking. I think, I don't know which review I read that said something about her, that she was playing a woman waiting for widowhood. And I think that was fantastic. Just all the scenes that she's just walking around the house, her body language. She's just waiting for a catastrophe to happen. And you can see it in her body language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a great way to put it. I wonder who said it.
Yeah, I
don't
know.
Someone will remind us in the comments.
Sorry. Yeah, it's some review. Maybe it was the New York Times. Maybe, I think. I don't know. I'm not sure. But yeah, she was great.
I mean, what did you really like about it other than her?
I know you talked a little bit about sort of like he did the intimacy of the of the scenes in the, what is it called? The space shuttle or whatever. The machine that takes them to the moon. My words are not working either. And those, I didn't, for the most part, I thought they were repetitive.
Yeah, I agree.
But the one that really, like, filled the tension, it was a moment where I, like, jumped out of my seat, is the one that doesn't go well and ends with a fire.
Oh, yeah.
And that was, like, such a, like, a staggering moment. I was just like, oh, my God. Like, that was, to me, was also a highlight of the film.
Yeah. And the aftermath of that scene was really well played by everyone, too.
Yes.
But, okay, so that's what I loved about it, is technically it's an amazing film. Like, the cinematography is beautiful, and the sound design, everything. I loved it on a technical level a lot. I do agree that the visual effects portions, like the trial runs, all that, they do get a little repetitive, but I think he was really smart to keep pulling it back to the intimacy of what these two people were going through.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I like that the moon, the fantastic thing about the moon landing itself is that we are 100% with Neil the whole time. Mm-hmm. There's no cutting back to Houston. There's no cutting back to Claire. We're just there. So that made those scenes very strong.
Yeah. And it was also very, like the sound in those scenes, was, I thought, or the lack of sound was a really beautiful element to the movie. I do think the movie totally works, and I think it's going to do really well with Oscar.
Oh, because, you know, the box office has been not good so far anyway. It's from what I read. I mean, we're recording on Sunday morning, and it has done much less than expected.
Well, I wasn't talking about box office, but Oscar.
Yeah, I know. I understand. But, like, box office does impact Oscar.
Yes.
So.
I am starting to believe that Ryan Gosling will be snubbed, which I'm, you know, not happy about. Because one thing I like best about him as a movie star is that he's so much better at minimalism than a lot of people are. It's kind of like his persona as an actor. And I think minimalism can be boring if you aren't great at it, but I really think he's great at doing almost nothing but giving you a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I really wish people could think about that instead of doing best equals most. Because I really do believe at this point he's going to get snubbed for showier stuff.
Mm. Well, you have him in your five now. I'm looking at your page of best actor.
Yes, and but I just haven't uploaded the updates.
Oh, okay. So do you think he's going to be snubbed in favor of who? Because now you have Bradley Cooper, Viggo, Ethan Hawke, Willem Dafoe, and Ryan.
Yeah, I am removing Willem Dafoe and Ryan Gosling for Clint Eastwood and Christian Bale.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can see that. Because I was going to say, have you seen the Willem Dafoe movie?
I have not, no.
Yeah.
My verdict, next week.
Yeah, I liked it a lot, but my verdict on that is that it's probably not going to be Oscar's cup of tea.
Yeah. Well, it's an abstract biopic, right?
Yeah. Very, very much so.
Yeah. They don't always go for the artistically out there biopics.
Yeah. You know what I missed in this movie?
What?
I wanted Octavia Spencer to appear and give it some heart.
Claire Foy wasn't enough for you?
Claire Foy was great, but Claire Foy was more like angry heart.
Yeah.
So we wanted some warmth. Little bit of warmth and heart that Octavia always gives in the margins of the films, like you have talked about before.
Yeah.
That was missing.
You wanted a fusion of Hidden Figures and First Man?
Yes, that would have made it perfect.
I'm sure we'll get a fan edit. All right. A Star is Born.
A Star is Born. Well, The Bradley Cooper Show. I loved it.
I loved it too. Okay. People complain every time anyone who loves something talks about Backlash. So I'm aware that a lot of you listening do not love A Star is Born, but I really do. And I find it's not so much backlash as I find the nitpicking. Once you hit October, any movie that debuts is like ripped apart, even by people who like it to some degree. Like everybody making concessions of what they will allow is a problem.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because people get hyper sensitive. And I think movies that are released before October, even though they are underpraised always because people forget about them for Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe people allow themselves to just enjoy them more as movies.
Yeah.
Because I don't understand, maybe this is just me being too inside my own head, but I don't understand how you can watch that and be nitpicking, because it's just so... I realize it maybe has some issues here and there, but it's just so, like, it has so much largesse of spirit and emotion that how do you not get caught up in it
to the point where
you're nitpicking everything?
Yeah, I think that just comes with the territory. It's such a big hit. It's seen as this front runner for the Oscars. Everybody's talking about it. And I think it breeds that when everybody's talking about it, whether, you know, positively or about box office or about music or about how sexy Bradley Cooper, you know, looks, you know, there is so many conversations going on that the people who did not get swept by all of that, have to then chime in too. And, I hear you. It is kind of sometimes, a little annoying, but also I think it's fine. Like, everybody can talk about it. And
yeah,
at this point, it's just the conversation just means that people are really watching and paying attention to it.
Yeah, no, I get that too. I guess I was just a little bummed because I feel like people are cutting themselves off to a certain degree from enjoying things. Like, as you know, I did not respond that much to If Beale Street Could Talk, which you loved. Which we'll talk about later when people can see it, because it's still a month away from opening. But I was, like, really invested in the things that I was enjoying about it. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't wanting to pick it apart for people who were loving it. It just didn't totally work for me.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think, like I said, also, Brett, this is like, is it the fourth iteration of the story? There's just a lot of material out there that you can nitpick about. Like, I just watched this video that is comparing Judy Garland and Barbara Streisand. And it was, like, so funny and informative, but also a little nitpicky. So there's just, I think, with this story, with this movie, with the stars involved, Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper, there's just so big, such big stars, that it breeds that.
Yeah.
But I hear you. It's going to be, you know, hopefully it's not going to be the La La Land sort of, like, backlash.
Yeah, because the La La Land thing was ridiculous. It's such an enjoyable movie. And then people decided it was just garbage by the end. And I was like, that's insane. Like, even if you didn't think it's the best of the year, it's so freaking enjoyable as a movie.
So, yeah, well, anyway, let's talk about what we loved about A Star Is Born, because I think we're both very positive on it.
Yeah. I mean, I loved the music from the first chords. Like, I thought the choice of that the first time you hear Lady Gaga sing was the prologue to, or the intro to Over the Rainbow, was very bold. And I thought really smart because, like, it felt so confident in that it's like, yes, I'm aware I'm a remake.
Yeah.
but it was sort of the fact that the shot you're seeing, this is right when you meet Lady Gaga, and she's actually taking out the garbage from her lowly job when she starts singing this. So the shot is of an alleyway with, like, you know, the garbage bin. So it's just really not glamorous, but then the title card comes up and her voice is beautiful. And it's just like, I thought it was such a smart way to start the movie. And I thought, or to start her part of the movie.
Yeah, absolutely. I loved it too, because, you know, once, you know, and you see the way that they wrote A Star Is Born, it filled the screen, and she did the Judy Garland thing, and you're like, oh my God, this is going to be like a big movie. I am ready. You know, come at me. I agree. It was such a great way to start.
And also, just, I was impressed with Bradley Cooper's physicality, like, for the whole movie. And I don't mean that he's hot, but yes, he's hot. But I mean, like, I thought he had fully incorporated everything you learn about the character into his body language. There was, like, all the... It's not just the voice, which is amazing that he sounds like Sam Elliott, and, which they keep making reference to him stealing his voice. And
yeah.
But just, like, the way he tilts his head, and then you hear about, like, his hearing issues.
Mm-hmm.
And they never directly reference the hearing issues in terms of the way he behaves. Mm-hmm. But it's all over the performance. So I just felt like... I just felt like he was so fully invested in everything about that character. I think it's his best performance ever, and I already thought he was a great actor.
Yeah, I agree. I think he was the best thing about it. Like, I was also very taken with his performance, and he was very, very, like, because the beginning, like you said, until they meet and all of that, it's just so amazing, the first hour. And then I think it does dip a little bit, but then it comes back up. Because, you know, it's the rise and decline. And, mm-hmm. and the decline is all about Bradley Cooper. And that, to me, was the strongest part of the movie because of his performance.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because I was going to say my follow-up question was going to be, what will you allow in terms of nitpicking? And I also agree. Like, I get why people think the second hour dips. But that's a natural part of A Star Is Born. That happens in the other versions too. It's part of the story in that it builds to such a crescendo and then it just, you know, starts to disintegrate.
Yeah.
And like, that's just built into the structure of it. The second hour is always going to be a tougher watch. It's not as fun. It's not as musical, you know, like, So I agree that the sort of energy of it, not just the fact that it gets sadder, but the energy lags a little bit, but then it comes roaring back, as you say.
Yeah, because you're watching Bradley and he's playing it so well, like all those scenes, you know, where, you know, we're not spoiling anything, but you know, he is declining.
Yeah.
So all those scenes are, it's just like, he fills the screen with his performance, and I was just enjoying looking at him. And I know some people, one of the nitpicks that I've heard is that this is more of his story than the other versions, and I don't know that I agree with that, but then I'm not objective also, because I was just so taken with him. So mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, I don't care, make it Bradley's or whatever, Jackson Maine story, because he is the performance that I'm enjoying watching.
Yeah. Well, and also, you know, not to get into too many personal details, but if you've ever had anybody in your life who is an alcoholic, which I won't go into, but I have had in my life experiences with people dealing with that issue, and that was even so authentic, like the way he would like pass out, or the way he would, you'd think he'd be listening to a conversation, but he was actually about to pass out. Like,
yes,
all those scenes
yes,
were very, yes. like, upsetting to me personally as someone who's dealt with, you know, someone with alcoholism. So, I just loved the movie. I get that not everybody will.
Yeah. I loved it, too, and I want to do talk about that. He does really get that fugue state in the middle where, like, somebody who's drunk is kind of, like, blacking out.
Yeah.
And he does play that really well, and I really, you know, I never sort of, like, my favorite performance of the year is never from, like, this big studio movie, but I guess in 2018 it's going to be, because it is really the performance of the year anyway. I haven't seen everything, obviously, and we still have a month and a half, but it is so far.
But after New York Film Festival, you've seen most of the big ones, right?
Yes, I've seen most of the big ones, for sure, yeah. But yeah, he's amazing.
Yes. So what's your favorite song other than Shallow?
So this is where I have a nitpick.
Okay.
So I thought all the songs were completely unmemorable except for Shallow. And so I'm not one of those people who's who's putting the soundtrack on repeat at all times. I just put Shallow on repeat at all times, because even the song at the end, which I was like waiting to be amazed by it, I was just like, okay. So anyway, you tell me then what's your other favorite song.
Well, I love Maybe This Time, or not, well, what's the title? The Bradley Cooper solo. I forget.
Let the Old Ways Die?
Yeah. Maybe It's Time. That's what it's called. Maybe It's... I was using cabaret language for Maybe This Time.
Oh, yeah. No, that's the one he sings at the beginning, right?
Yeah. I love that song. And I love the finale, the I'll Never Love Again. Yes, in some ways, it's very, like, formulaic, like, torch song ballad, but I just totally ate it up. I love it. So I have been listening to the soundtrack on loop.
Oh, I love the way he filmed it. Like, it was very strong. The way that he filmed it, and the intercutting between Ali on stage and then him writing the song with her. I thought as a visual and as a scene, it worked very well. But I have no interest in listening to that song again.
Huh. And here I've been listening to it constantly. To each their own, the joys of art.
But I'm not usually musically inclined. So, like, I listen to movie soundtracks as opposed to pop songs. So I'm not the best person to talk about that.
Yeah. Oh, I will say one other nitpick I do understand is that, you know, people complaining about the way Ali's career doesn't seem to make sense in terms of she seems like a singer-songwriter type, and then becomes more of like a pop diva.
Yes.
So I agree that that was a little unclear of what they were going for.
It is a little muddled, yes, that part.
But I also think you're seeing everything in that movie through Jackson Maine, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I think you have to take into account point of view. I'm not sure that the movie is actually judging her career so much as Jackson is judging her career.
Yeah.
And we're seeing it through him.
Yes. And I do think the one thing, if we're going to compare it with the other Star Is Borns, I do think like his sort of decline is not based on jealousy of her success, which I thought that was like a great change. He's not jealous of her. Like even the big scene where he ruins her night is not him, you know, having a tantrum because he's jealous.
Right.
It's him being lost in the moment, thinking he's supporting her.
Yeah.
And I think that's the best change that they have made. And he never cheats on her, you know, he's just like, he really loves her and is supportive.
You know, that is, I hadn't thought about that, but that is a major shift from the other versions in terms of it's not about career jealousy or rise and fall in that way. It's really much more about his disease and, you know, him and his depression much more comes from his inability to be supportive of her because of his disease,
mm-hmm.
which makes it even more tragic.
Yeah, it makes it so more tragic. Like that scene of at the Grammys is just so tragic because he's like he in his mind, you know, the mind of somebody in this fugue state. Where he's maybe blacked out or maybe not blacked out, he's thinking he is out there to support his wife, and mm-hmm. he is not at all.
Yeah.
It makes the scene just more, just gives it so much more feeling.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Sam Elliott, any thoughts?
Sam Elliott was great, but also he had, like, the first scene where they have, like, a whole... a fight, I was just confused. I'm like, what? Because they fight about his dad and where he died and where he was buried, and that was like, it just never happens, and it seems like exposition. So I am not with people who think he's going to win the Oscar unless Star Is Born just wins everything. Because even the big scene where they have like sort of the reconciliation, the scene in the car, mm-hmm. I thought that was Bradley Cooper's Oscar clip. And I'm just like, I just want to look at Bradley, so I'm sorry, Sam Elliott.
Interesting. Okay, I am of the opinion that he could win the Oscar. And we'll see. We'll see how the season goes. It's not a slam dunk. Actually, none of the Oscar wins that people think are going to happen for this movie, apart from Best Song, are slam dunks.
Yeah, I agree on that. And just the other thing is, like, when I'm looking at your page and Best Supporting Actor, when I look at the other actors, I mean, there's a couple there we haven't seen yet, but when I look at the other actors there, they're going to have so much more screen time than Sam Elliott that I just don't think he's going to be that competitive. But, you know, you never know. It could be just, he might have the best campaign.
Right. And you never know about those things.
Yeah. Do you want me to talk about Lady Gaga's performance?
No. No, I'm just kidding. No, I mean, I think because my initial tweets from before, you know, I wrote about the movie, but my initial tweets about it, people were like, but what about Lady Gaga? Because all I was talking about was Bradley and how much I love the movie. I think she's good. And like music, like obviously the movie wouldn't work. Even though it's more Jackson Maine's story this time, the movie wouldn't work if she wasn't, like, completely charismatic and compelling, which she is. So, like, on that level and her voice, like, I was super into it. Mm-hmm. But she won't be among my five nominees.
I agree with you. I think she was very strong in the singing scenes. I think some of the acting scenes, especially ones that sort of, like, go longer.
Uh-huh.
You can feel her performance dip in and out, and they're like, okay, we'll just use this take because she was in general the best.
Yeah.
But sometimes some line readings are just like, what? That's kind of weak, Lady Gaga. And like,
yeah.
I believe she was a pop star, but I never believed she was a cater waiter, so.
Okay. Gotcha. No, I did think she was really good in it, but I just think the she's going to win Best Actress thing is about celebrity and not about actually the performance.
But she does sing those songs so well.
Oh,
so
no,
she has
she's
so
amazing.
Many clips. So if people are going to repeat the clips, she
That's
could
true.
Win because The Shallow is such a high point for her. And
yeah.
It is the sequence in the movie that's the most memorable.
Yeah, no, that's true. And, I mean, I think she's... Like, the first hour of the movie is so... I do think that's why a lot of people are nitpicking because the first hour is basically an A-plus movie. Like, everything about it works.
Yes.
And it's so... That date that lasts, like, 20 minutes of screen time, which is a long time for one
mm-hmm.
sort of, like, very contained time period in any movie.
Mm-hmm.
Is firing on every possible level you can fire on. Comedy, drama, romance, musical. And so I think for people who the movie is like a wonderful experience, like for me and for you, I think it's because that first hour is so strong that you have the total buy-in to this relationship.
Absolutely, yeah.
Which is why the tragedy works, why everything, because that first hour is so strong. But where was I going with this?
Will Lady Gaga win Best Actress?
Oh. Right, but that aside, you know, aside from the fact that I just found her so charismatic and I love her singing, and I mean, she's obviously a brilliant musician, I view the best acting categories as more, I like my best actors to be, like, trained and super complicated and subtext, you know what I'm saying? I like the full thing.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Glenn Close in The Wife or Melissa McCarthy, who's great and Can You Ever Forgive Me?
Mm-hmm.
Charlize
Theron. Carey Mulligan.
Totally. Carey Mulligan. Oh yeah, which I even keep forgetting about, and I thought she was just literally amazing in that movie.
Superb, yeah.
So, I mean, that tends to be where I come from with the acting. I like my actors to be like really meaty characterizations.
And wouldn't it be funny if, like, of all these iterations, Lady Gaga is the one to win for this part? It would be funny. We'll see, but I look forward to people talking about this movie and it becoming a big hit and listening to The Shallow 5,000 more times every day. So.
Yeah, it's basically the Let It Go of this year.
Absolutely. And Lady Gaga is going to win that Oscar because she wrote the song, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. She had co-writers, but yeah, she's one of the writers on it. Oh. Yeah.
Go Gaga. Little monsters don't come for us, please. We love Gaga.
Yeah. Love her. Think she 1000% deserves best song, and that's even before I've heard all the songs that are eligible, because, like, that song is basically a masterpiece pop song.
Yeah, it is.
So yeah, I'm going to be cheering her on like crazy when she wins that Oscar. But I don't want her to win Best Actress. But one Oscar is enough, thank you. Colette.
Yes, one question about A Star is Born and its Oscar chances. And do you think that, because now it's been out for like, I can't even believe it's only been 9 days since it's been released, but it is. And, you know, the voices of dissent are increasing about it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's going to be a big, huge backlash? Because the backlash points of view seem to be that this movie takes Jackson's point of view, which means it's devaluing the female lead. The other thing is that it's only the first part that's really big. So do you think that that's going to knock it down? Or if you were to predict that it's such a big hit that that's not going to matter?
Well, I mean, I think backlashes always matter to a degree. But with really big hits, they don't tend to matter that much. Like, this is going way back, but I remember, because this is a backlash that I was hoping would work. So I want to go way back. The backlash to A Beautiful Mind, if anybody remembers that, like 17 years ago. Because everything that was up against it was completely brilliant. So, like, yes. Any other choice would have been better for Best Picture. Mm-hmm. And there was a significant backlash to that movie.
Yeah.
But it was also such a huge hit that in the end, like, people don't remember this. It was a huge box office hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, in the end, like, the sort of mainstream fervor for something tends to overrule, like, backlashes, mm-hmm. which tend to be more, like, small, noisy groups, yeah. You know.
And, like, if you think of the year of La La Land and Moonlight, like, I think most people loved both movies.
Yes.
And Moonlight mm-hmm. was such a strong movie. And I don't see that A Star is Born, at least from what I can predict right now, will have a movie that is as beloved as Moonlight was.
Right. Yeah, I'm not really convinced it's going to win Best Picture, but if it doesn't, I don't think it will be because of backlash. I think it will be because, you know, people really fell in love with something else. And also, like, the voting now with the preferential ballot, I do think that's why Moonlight won as well. Like, I do think on a straight vote, how it was, like, you know, 10, 20 years ago, I think La La Land would have won Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
But the people who didn't like La La Land really didn't like it, but everyone loved Moonlight, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I liked La La Land, but I was so happy Moonlight won, because of the two, it was definitely my favorite. Yeah.
I mean, it was better than La La Land, but the idea that La La Land was also garbage, is my point of
view. Oh, yeah, sure. I agree with you on both counts, yeah.
I'm not sure if Star is Born is going to win, but on the other hand, I don't really see... I get why people are saying that, because when I think about the other contenders, I have trouble picturing them winning.
I mean, I could see Black Panther winning if that movie really comes out with a big campaign, which I think they are planning.
Yeah, they're definitely planning. Yeah, I mean, I do think the idea that Black Panther's not going to get nominated is crazy. It's totally getting nominated. The question is how many nominations, and will it be enough nominations to make people think of it as something that they want to crown, in mm-hmm. addition to just the general achievement of making the Best Picture list?
Yeah.
Which is still an achievement, of course.
Yes. And what about the Critics Awards? Do you think the Critics Awards would be between Roma and The Favourite?
Yeah. That's totally what I think is going to happen. I think Roma and The Favourite, and maybe an outside possibility for If Beale Street Could Talk for critics, but I don't think critics are going to go for A Star is Born or Black Panther.
No, I don't think either. Yeah. Well, you know, it's exciting. I think it's an exciting year. There are some good movies, and it's still not clear, which is always a good thing.
Yes. Although, it's so funny. We say this quite often, and then it instantly clears up, and it's depressing that it narrows down so quickly.
I know. It's just
so
like
quickly.
The Golden Globe night. Whoever wins the acting awards at the Golden Globe, whoever wins Best Picture, either one of those two, is going to win. And it's like every year, it never fails. Like last year, everybody thought William Dafoe was winning Best Supporting Actor. And then the Golden Globes happen, and it's Sam Rockwell all the way. And yeah, that's it. So just wait for that Golden Globe night. It, everything will just be clock step from there, the same winner.
I am curious. The movie I'm probably most curious about, because I don't, it's the only one I feel like I don't have a handle on how well it's going to do, is Roma. Because the other ones, I get a real sense of how the season's going to shake out, other than who might actually win. But in terms of, you know, the amount of nominations and sort of the general feeling about them. Mm-hmm. But Roma obviously has critics' awards in the bag, and yep, people love it, but there's still a lot of variables about that movie. Like, it still has the Netflix issue. We still don't know how much of a theater release it's going to get, even though they say it's going to get
a big one.
A big one. Or big comparatively, which is still small. So, yeah. There's a lot that's unknown for me about that movie, even though
it's slow, it's in Spanish. These are all variables. But I just think Alfonso Cuarón is such a Hollywood staple, and he has worked with everyone, and everyone knows him and loves him, that I think those things will make it major.
Yeah. But I'm just like, major enough to win and be the first movie to win Best Picture that's a foreign movie?
I think it can win Best Director for sure.
Yeah, I do think it could win Best Director. Yeah. Because I don't currently believe Bradley Cooper will win Best Director, even if A Star is Born wins Best Picture.
Well, he has to win Best Actor. That's his prize. That's what he should win.
Right. So, to finish up, Colette. You saw it, right?
I did see the Keira Knightley Colette, yes.
You did see the what?
The Keira Knightley Colette.
Oh, yeah.
As if there was another one. I'm surprised by how well it's doing at the box office. Like, it's still in, like, moderate, sort of small release, but it's doing so well.
Yeah, they're even saying it's going to end up, I mean, we're about to find out within, like, an hour, but the early predictions is that we'll make the top 10 list this weekend, even though it's still in limited release.
Oh, wow. People are loving it. That's great.
But I remain shocked, because to me, it just kind of sat there as a movie. I feel bad about my reaction, because I love the story of Colette. Like, mm-hmm. I love...
Yeah.
And I love, you know, the late Richard Glatzer, who, you know... Who
wrote the screenplay. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love Keira Knightley, but I just didn't... I don't know, it just didn't really do anything for me.
Yeah, I mean, I liked aspects of it. Like, I liked sort of, like, the ideas it was grappling with about Colette and about sort of what artists do and codependent relationships and all of that. Like, there was so much it was exploring, but also it had ideas, but also I don't think it had much to say about them. It was more like presenting things as opposed to, you know, grappling with stuff. And I thought everything was very muted, like, it's not a movie that is, you know, you're amazed by the filmmaking, or wow, there is like a performance where you're like, oh my God, that performance,
yeah,
I'm gonna remember at the end of the year. Like, everybody was fine, but nobody was like exceptional. It's completely sort of middle of the road. Like, I gave it 3 stars, but it's just like, that's like, yeah, it's just like a straight B movie.
And not in the classic sense of B-movies.
Yeah, not in the classic sense.
So, in the grading scale.
The grading scale, yes, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah, I think part of the problem for me is that Colette was such an iconoclast figure in history, and the decision to make it about coming into her voice rather than her voice was, to mm-hmm. me, a missed opportunity, because, you know, even if you're going by the zeitgeist right now about, you know, empowering women and, like, we need to stop devaluing the contributions of women and all these things, the movie sort of takes place before she was this powerhouse literary figure. So it's like,
yeah,
she doesn't really come into her own until the end of the movie, essentially. It's all about, like, how she became an author, mm-hmm. as opposed to her voice. Like, as opposed to something like The Hours, you know, where she's already this legend, you know.
Yeah.
Virginia Woolf.
Yeah, this was more about how she found her voice.
Yeah. And to me, that maybe that was what was not exciting about it, because, mm-hmm. like, as someone who has read some of her books, like, I just, I just was more interested in seeing a story about, because she did live, like, this sort of, like, crazy ahead of her time life, and we didn't, mm-hmm. we only got, like, a tiny taste of that in the movie.
I mean, the movie is sort of, like, you know, it's, what I liked about it is that it's unabashedly queer. It talks about their open marriage. It talks about her relationships with women. It talked about, like, how she found sort of, like, veered a little bit into cross-dressing. So there's all of these things that are happening. But also just the way it was presented, it was just, like, I wanted a moment where I, like, you know, snap out of the fugue state I was in and just, like, oh, my God, this was amazing, which
yeah.
just never happened.
Yeah. I mean, even that feeling of mutedness, I even felt that with costumes, which I really expected this movie to be able to be, like, just this dynamic costume movie, but it wasn't even that.
Yeah. Although they do make a thing at the beginning of it, how she chose to wear things that were maybe not pretty, but that she was comfortable in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, and I agree with you, like, just nothing really stood out. Like, you can't say, I can't pinpoint at one thing. Like, Keira Knightley is good, but also, like, I don't think this is a very memorable performance.
Yeah, yeah. So, a disappointment for us, but it's doing well, so maybe some of you can saw it this weekend, since it's in, like, 600 theaters, and they're thinking it's gonna make the top 10 list or just outside of it, you know, fighting against things that are in thousands of theaters. So that's amazing.
That is amazing. And good for, you know, Westmoreland and Keira Knightley, which,
yeah.
and Christine Vachon, who produced so.
Yeah.
All people we like.
Yes, that's right. All people whose careers we want to do well. We just didn't love this particular movie. So that's all.
Yeah. Okay.
Any parting thoughts, Murtada? Well, we just wrapped up the New York Film Festival, so, and it is, as we're recording this, it is October 14th, so everything is about to come to theaters.
Yes.
So what are the top three things you want to tell people to see the second they get a chance to see them?
Well, I would tell them Wildlife is opening next week in New York and LA, and it's got one of the best performances of the year from Carey Mulligan. Amazing performance. And go see that. That was one of the highlights of the New York Film Fest. Shoplifters, which is, I guess, we both loved it at
yeah.
New York. And it's coming out next month, which won the Palme d'Or this year. That was such a highlight of the festival, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with both of those. I also think Border, which comes out right the 26th, Sweden's Oscar entry, is very much worth seeing. It's very memorable. Have you seen that one yet?
I've seen it, yes. I agree. It's unlike anything else you're going to see this year, so go see that one.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
And I really do think, because, you know, sometimes the makeup category at the Oscars has something really random that's foreign. I really do think this movie could compete in that category.
It should. Like, it's yeah. just, it's all about the makeup. And then I saw it at the festival, and the makeup artist was in, did the Q&A after the film. So
oh,
usually
great.
It's the director, but this time was the makeup artist. So hopefully he's, like, done some interviews and to get his name out there, while he was in town.
Yeah. Yeah, so definitely look out for those. I mean, Shoplifters, like, I almost prefer it to Roma. I keep tossing them back and forth in my mind, but they're both so good. Roma's getting all the attention, but Shoplifters is just a whammy emotionally. Oh my god.
Yeah, I mean, I actually would not be surprised if it won the Oscar for Best Foreign Language. Remember when things like The White Ribbon and A Prophet and
yeah.
the movie that everybody thinks is going to win doesn't win, Pan's Labyrinth didn't win.
Yeah.
You know, so I could definitely see a surprise like that with Roma and people just falling in love. Because this movie is so easy to fall in love with, and it's just, it says so much, and it's so affecting, and it sticks. Like, I'm still remembering so many things from it. It's just
yeah.
such a good...
I keep having whole scenes and, like, little tiny bits of scenes just keep coming back super vivid in my head. And it's like every character is, like, completely interesting. Which, you know, I can't say for Roma... Roma has so many great things about it, and it's an amazing movie, but it's not, like, a character movie,
I see what you're saying. Like, the characters in Shoplifters are just so memorable, and there is five or six of them, the main characters, and each one of them, there you can follow their story separately,
yeah.
and they each get sort of a moment, and you get a full sort of life of that character, of
yeah.
each character, yeah.
Whereas in Roma, they feel like part of the set pieces, which is why I've been a little surprised by all the hoopla about Yalitza Aparicio, because I thought she was really good, but, like, it's just, you know, one of the pieces of Cuarón's, you know, vision.
Yeah, but I do think she's going to get nominated, because if Roma is this Oscar judge or not, like, I don't see the acting branch just deciding, oh, we're not going to vote for Roma. Like, if the acting branch was the biggest branch, if Roma is going to be this big Oscar juggernaut, they're going to want to vote for Roma, too. And they're only allowed to vote for actors, so they'll vote for her.
She would have to knock out a really big star, because there's a lot of really big stars in the running.
Oh, she'll knock out Nicole Kidman. I don't think anybody cares about that movie.
She'll have to knock out more than just Nicole Kidman. Because there's also Carey Mulligan, Viola Davis, like...
Oh, I'm just looking at the five that you have right now on your page, and I think of those five that you have, she'll knock out Nicole Kidman. But I don't know, maybe you've changed since you published.
I have. Like, the updates are going up in the next day or two. I've
okay.
finished all the actors, but she's still not in my top five. I'm going to see
okay.
how the campaign goes, because I don't really see how she can knock out... I mean, she would have to get in above Nicole Kidman, Viola Davis, Carey Mulligan, you know, all three of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, last year when Octavia Spencer got in Best Supporting Actress over
yeah.
sort of individual actresses who
Right, that's
had...
true.
And
That's
because
true.
She was in the Best Picture front runner, like, if Roma is like that, like, I can see her getting in.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
now, you know, the Academy just sort of chooses 7 or 8 or, I don't know, 11 movies and distributes all the nominations amongst them.
Which is so irritating. But it is true. It is true that they do that. All right, thanks for listening, everyone. And, well, we won't be back next week in this traditional form, because I will be at the Middleburg Film Festival. But we will be back shortly. We're not going to leave it a whole month this time. But from here on out, it's all craziness, because, like, every weekend is major movies opening.
Yes, it's exciting.
Yes. So enjoy, go to as many movies as you can see, and we'll try to talk about as many as we can talk about.